You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and today, playing with food is going to be a little bit different. Today, I'm exploring rare fruits, and it's all taking place in my kitchen and dining room. What are rare fruits? Well, I looked up what the California rare fruit growers had to say about the definition. The website states, the California Rare Fruit Growers, CRFG, is the largest amateur fruit-growing organization in the world. We specialize in fruit not native to nor grown commercially in any given area, but our breadth of knowledge and experience covers the environmentally sound culture of any and all edible plants. So these fruits may not be rare by world standards, but they are rare here in California. The amateur growers I have with me in my kitchen now are all from the Central Coast. But let's start with the end.
What could have made this meal better?
Some classical music in the background.
Yeah. Or a string quartet.
So I have chosen Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique and Sibelius' Violin Concerto to play in the background while you listen to my playing with fruit with the California Rare Fruit Growers. These two very spirited pieces convey the mood of the evening, and they will also mask some of the chopping, boiling, tossing, talking, and clinking of wine glasses, which all accompany the spirited preparation of food among friends. And here they are.
My name is Jenny Weaver. I'm from Pismo Beach, and I'm here because Larry invited me.
Hi, I'm Larry Hollis. I'm from San Luis, one of the rare fruit growers. I'm here because Alicia invited me.
Hello, Father. I'm Alicia Taff, and I'm from Santa Maria, California, and I'm here to support the California Rare Fruit Growers because you invited me.
I'm Carol Scott from Arroyo Grande and also a rare fruit grower, and I'm here because Alicia invited me.
And I'm Marilyn Saverson. I live in SLO, and I was invited by Larry, and I'm not a rare fruit grower.
I first spoke with Larry Hollis about his exotic fruits, and then Jenny Weaver and Larry Kandarian about their exotic grain.
Larry, you seem to be the link between all of them in terms of your enthusiasm for rare fruit growing. What's your role, and what got you excited and interested in rare fruit growing?
I first ran into the California Rare Fruit Growers in San Diego back in the late 60s or early 70s. And at that time, I had no idea that you grow mangoes or bananas or papayas in California. Moved to San Luis County, ran into the rare fruit growers at one of the big gardening events here, and actually signed up. And over that time, I planted an orchard. It just became my hobby. The rare fruit growers became my friends. I have a small residential lot in town, but it's planted pretty densely. We have kind of a joke that says that if the sun hits the ground anywhere on your property, that's room for another tree. And so I've pretty much taken that to heart. I've probably got 40-something actual trees, and on those trees, I've probably got another 60 kinds of fruit because most of my trees are multi-grafted. My plum trees have 5 varieties. My apple trees have 5 varieties.
5 varieties on one apple tree?
5 varieties of apples on one apple tree.
How does that work?
It's just a matter of grafting scions of different varieties onto an existing tree. You can't grow cherries on an apple tree, but you can grow all kinds of apples on an apple tree. And you can grow most of the stone fruits. You can mix them. You can have a peach and a plum and an apricot growing on the same tree. It's better to just have multiple varieties of plums growing on a plum tree because they grow at the same speed. That's kind of one of our favorite things to do, actually, is learning how to graft, teaching other people how to graft, and then grafting our own trees.
That's fantastic. So list off as many fruits on your plot as you can.
Starting with this platter right here in front of us, 2 varieties of blood oranges. They're the Washington navel. The pink one is the Caracara navel. I've got Trovita oranges, the Mexican limes, the Valencia orange, 10 or 15 varieties of apples from pink pearls, which are the kind that are pink on the inside, to very early summer apples like the Anna, to very late apples like the Granny Smith. 2 cherimoya trees that have both cherimoyas and atomoyas. Peach trees that have both peaches and nectarines. 1 pear tree. 3 avocado trees. The avocado I'm using today is a Wurtz avocado, Hass or Haas avocado, Hawaiian avocado that I got from Robert, who's here tonight. Oh, and I've got a Reed avocado too, which is a wonderful round avocado.
I'm Jenny, and I live in Pismo Beach. I grew up in Santa Barbara. I went to Cal Poly. I got my degree in fruit science, so I just love growing fruit. I'm making a farro dish, which was an ancient grain with some mint and parsley, and I'm going to add some rind from a Meyer lemon.
I only heard about Meyer lemons in the context of celebrity chefs saying, oh, and the only way to have this is that you have to have some Meyer lemon aioli. And I'm like, you mean mayonnaise with a squeeze of lemon in it. So what is a Meyer lemon and what makes it different?
Well, they're a lot rounder than the normal kind, and they have a very thin skin, and the juice is a little bit sweeter. It's not as acidic as the normal Eureka lemon. A lot of people just prefer it because it's not quite as tart. When they get riper, they turn darker yellow. Great. If I left this on the tree, it would turn almost an orange. It's a very pretty fruit.
And tell us about this ancient grain. Do you grow this ancient grain?
I don't, but the grower is sitting right here, Larry Kandarian.
I'm Larry Kandarian from Kandarian Organic Farms.
Tell us about this ancient grain.
It's Ethiopian blue-tinged farro, which is 9,500 years old, and it has a purplish cast to it. They call it blue tinge, but it's purplish, and so it has a lot of resveratrol, like red wine does. Very good for you, very heart healthy, has polyphenols, antioxidants, and anthocyanins in it.
What conditions does it need to grow?
It's very sustainable. It needs very little water. It's a C3, a cool season grass annual, and so it grows in the time when we're getting water as we are now, and so it almost is going to need no irrigation. We dry farm it.
What did you do during the drought?
We had to augment with irrigation towards the end of the season to make it finish. It's kind of nutty and has an exquisite mouthfeel. It's just a very unique grain. You can make flour and make bread, and it has been done by many people.
One thing I love about it is I cooked it the other day just in water, and I used some to make a pilaf, and I kept the other and turned it into a dessert. I put cinnamon and butter and maple syrup on it, and it was the most delicious dessert I've ever had. You can also have it for breakfast. It's a really versatile grain.
Marilyn Severson, Carol Scott, and Alicia Taff are all avid fruit growers as well.
You've got something that looks like a small pumpkin.
It is a Japanese pumpkin. It has a real interesting flavor, kind of between a sweet potato and a butternut squash.
Okay.
And it works really well in a lot of recipes. It has really a unique flavor. I'm using it tonight in a fried rice recipe, and I also make a soup. Spicy Thai soup, but it can be used in a myriad, anywhere that you can use a squash, you can use a kabocha. And they'll hold on your countertop for, you know, a month or more, so they're a very stable item. I'm making it because my husband was in Seattle and had it at a Japanese restaurant and was so enamored with it that he called home from the restaurant to say, this is the most amazing thing, and the chef wouldn't give him the recipe, but when we got home, we got on the internet. Miraculously, there it was. It's a family favorite now.
Got Robert and Carol Scott here, and what do you grow?
We have close to 200 varieties of apples, and then we have Asian pears, regular pears, nectarines, cherimoyas,
avocados,
about 40 varieties of avocados, and Robert collects varieties of fruit. So it's not just how many trees we have, it's how many varieties on each tree, because we do the grafting just like Larry was talking about. Robert orders seeds from all over, Australia, South America. So we have a lot of real unusual fruits, so we can have fruit all year long. That's kind of real important to us, to be able to eat fresh from the garden all through the year.
You are making a passion fruit chicken and rice with allspice leaves. We know about allspice, and some people know it comes from a berry, and some of us know about passion fruit, but describe them.
The passion fruit grows on a vine, and there's
20 varieties at least of different passion flora fruit.
That are edible. And then the allspice, even though the berries are what you're used to, in the spice itself, like pumpkin pie and stuff, you have to have a male and a female tree, and we only have one, so we just use the leaves, and I just crush them up into dishes, and they're very fragrant, and they add an allspice flavor to whatever I'm cooking with.
But the passion fruit, where does passion fruit come from?
It's native to southern Brazil up to northern Argentina, actually, the edulous variety. And there's a lot of other passion fruit that's more tropical, that really it's harder to grow here.
Describe the passion fruit for those people who've never seen one.
The edulous is a purple fruit. It starts out greenish. It looks like about the size of an egg. And then it turns to purple and it drops off of the vine. You go and pick it up and you wait until it starts getting wrinkled. And then you know that's the right time to cut it and eat it. On the inside, it's kind of a gelatinous, yellowy orange with various seeds throughout that are totally edible. They're kind of a little crunchy, but totally edible.
Alicia, you grow jujubes. The last thing I knew about jujubes is they were these hard gelatinous things that you get in the movie theater, and it doesn't look anything like that.
Not at all. This is actually a rose masquerading as a pseudo-date. These are mahogany-colored fruit. I dry them to a moisture content of about 25%. They have delicious flavor, kind of brown sugar and caramel with some fig notes. You kind of get that same aroma when you smell the fruit. It's a little spongy in texture, very versatile. Anything you can do with a raisin or a date or a dried fig or a dried apple, we can do with these fruits.
Great. Would you like a real knife and a cutting board?
I'm flexible.
Get you one of those. I'll get you one of those. Where are they from?
They are native to Central Asia, all across Asia, as a matter of fact. The variety I grow is Xyzophus jujuba, but on the Southeast Asia and also in India, they grow another variety, Xyzophus moritana, which is not frost tolerant. So in the arid places, they're able to dry these fruit and the nutritional value is maintained even though the fruit is dried. So it was a staple food for many indigenous cultures across Asia.
Fantastic. And how did you find out about it and how did you get it here?
Well, I'm half Chinese, so I was raised on the fruit. Traditionally, the fruit is dried very hard. They would just let the fruit dry and it became that consistency. Then they would reconstitute it in soup or in the rice pot or in teas. I actually found a grower who was probably the premier individual about knowing about jujubes. His name was Roger Meyer. He lived in San Diego. And I camped on Roger Meyer's doorstep. He couldn't get rid of me. So that's where I got my information and got my initial trees.
That's fantastic. So what are you making today?
Today, I'm making an unnamed jujube tart with mascarpone on puff pastry with salted and toasted walnuts drizzled with honey from my ranch.
That sounds really good. So you're bringing the dessert tonight.
I'm bringing dessert, that's correct.
That's really good. Well, I'll get you a real cutting board and a real knife. Hopefully you'll make your job a little bit easier.
Okay.
This segment is called Playing with Food. And so with your exotic rare fruits, what's the most playing that you've done? Have you done a lot of playing around?
Probably the most is substituting, like, for common fruits, the rare fruits. Like I made, like with feijoas, which is a pineapple guava, I will substitute those for recipes that I usually used apple, like I make a feijoa cake with the, instead of using apples. So I do have to say I use most of them in desserts because desserts knock the socks off of everybody.
Great.
Let's find out what they're cooking up and a little bit more about their craft.
Tis time.
Round about the cauldron go. Boil thou first in the charmed pot.
Double toil
and trouble.
Fire
burn
and cauldron bubble.
Feel it of a penny snake. In the cauldron boil and bake.
Finger burst strangled babe.
So your chicken's bubbling away. It's very yellow. What's making it really yellow?
That's the passion fruit. I took the pulp out of the fruit and then I put it in the blender with a little water because it has these really big seeds. I do not like to crunch on them. They are a little too crunchy for me. So I blended it and then I strained them out.
So it looks like there's black pepper in there now.
That's
because
the little seeds.
Because the seeds are black, yeah.
Right.
And are they crunchy like watermelon seeds or crunchier or crunchy?
They're crunchier, like, yes, they're crunchier. Everyone said, what's with the rocks in the food? So I knew right then that I wasn't gonna cook with the seeds in the passion fruit anymore.
Okay. I like the seeds. I make jam with them, and
I
love them. And I don't think they're crunchier than watermelon.
Maybe the jam, I don't know.
I had a huge, very prolific passion fruit vine, and we made drinks out of them, cocktails. You can make ice cubes out of them and put them in punch or in drinks. And I've made lots of jam. And we made passion fruit pavlova with it. It's just so versatile. And I don't mind the seeds. I know most people do. When I'm playing, I keep my seeds in.
And I also like something that looks pretty. I like it to be interesting texture-wise. I like it to be visually appetizing, appealing. And, of course, good for you. And all this stuff's good for you.
Well, it looks beautiful. The different shades of orange and red. It looks like New England in the fall, but it's slices of orange.
Indeed.
And then you've got this other bowl of green and the strange reddish brownish color of the jujubes and the macadamia nuts and the avocados. It's just beautiful. And then you're going to put it all together.
And just for a little spiciness, some arugula. Fantastic. Yes, I'm going to toss all of this with the dressing, which is virgin olive oil. Because I wanted a kind of a vinaigrette, I used a tangelo. The tangelos are a little early right now, so they still have a little tartness in them. This is another citrus. So I used tangelo juice instead of lemon juice, and a little olive oil and a little ground pepper. And I'm going to toss that all and then place it on top of the bed of citrus.
While Larry, Alicia, Jenny, Marilyn, and Carol finished up their preparations, I spoke to our silent partners about this spectacular coming together.
So we have the hangers-on here. Jim Gates, who is one of the board of directors of KCBX.
Yes.
We've got Larry Kandarian, who grew our faro. We've got Robert Scott, who
California rare fruit grower, grows the passion fruit.
And we've got
Nels Severson, whose wife is cooking kabocha squash this evening.
This show is called Playing with Food. What do you think of the playing around so far?
I'm having fun. It's great. Where can you come and have free beverage and watch people cook all these interesting dishes and enjoy great conversation?
Yeah, I'll drink to that. Great conversation, great meeting of the minds, and good food.
The unbelievable part of this is the jujube liquor. This is like...
Yes.
Amazing. We have got to figure out how to do this.
Yes.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. It's amazing.
The
finish.
Really great finish.
The finish is incredible.
Great mouthfeel.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marilyn's food I've tasted before, Larry's food, and many of the things that these people harvest and bring I've tasted before. It's wonderful to see them combine all of this together today. I think this will end up being a truly exceptional meal.
Jujube liquor? What's that? Back to Alicia for some elucidation on this libation.
I have some amber liquid in front of me, which is usually scotch whiskey, single malt scotch. It's one of my favorite things. Anybody thinking about getting me a gift, single malt scotch will be accepted at any time. Alicia's going to tell me what it is.
This is a lovely jujube eau de vie that we've produced from some of our undesirable fruit. Small, misshapen fruit that may not be appropriate for retail sale. Rather than just get rid of those, we decided to do something interesting and unique. In combination with some friends, I created a jujube eau de vie, an unaged brandy, and so I welcome you to try it. It has a lovely aroma, and it's a little hot on the 165 proof side.
165 proof?
Yes.
Is that even legal?
We don't know. This is for home use only.
It is pretty strong on the nose. Pretty strong on the nose.
Just come from the top right here. Just
Well, I stuck my nose all the way in because
that's
what you're supposed to
do. No, not at 165 proof. You're just going to get the alcohol vapors.
That's what I did. Okay, now I'm going to taste it. It's beautiful. It's not overly sweet. It kind of tastes like a dessert wine. You can't feel the strength. Is that something that people fall afoul of?
Absolutely. I say enjoy your aperitif, wait 10 minutes. If you want another, try it, and wait 10 more.
Well, thank you. And if you have any spare, you can just pass it my way.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas with Father Ian Dellinger, and today I'm playing with food with five California rare fruit growers. We are all assembled in my kitchen, and they're making me a meal I'll never forget.
Now that everything was prepared and ready to go, it was time to dig in.
So here we are, everyone's gathered around the table. We're about ready to eat. What are we eating?
I made a passion fruit chicken and allspice rice.
Mine is a tossed green salad on a bed of multicolored citrus with macadamia nuts, sliced jujubes, arugula, and romaine.
Mine is a pilaf with pine nuts, parsley, mint, and farro.
And kabocha fried rice with shrimp, bacon, onion, garlic, and a little soy sauce.
We have some wines here, and we just want to thank the people who brought the wine. And where did this wine come from?
Tally Farm Group. Brian heard about your process, and he knows many of you people. And he read the menu, and he's trying to pair our meal with his specific wines.
Over dinner, I wanted to get to some of the more technical aspects of these fruits in California. I started with the mission of the California Rare Fruit Growers. One of the things it says on the CRFG website, it says environmentally sound culture of any and all edible plants. What does that mean?
I think that's probably doesn't mean monocultures of genetically modified, Roundup resistant grains, for instance.
Or irresponsible culture of anything. I mean, it's your responsibility to not reinvent the wheel, to look at your biome and say, this works here. I don't have to acidify my soil to grow blueberries, let's say. That's not natural for my environment. It's important to pay attention to work with what you've got.
You mentioned genetically modified. When you're grafting different plants to one another, isn't that genetic modification?
Oh, no. No, that's a mechanical craft that goes back thousands of years to ancient China. Genetic modification is adding a gene, going in down to the molecular level, and adding a fish gene to a tomato so that it won't spoil.
I then moved on to the potential for introducing invasive non-native species, which started with the admission of seed smuggling. You've got fruits that aren't from California. Could you end up in a situation like eucalyptus trees where they start pushing out native species and causing other problems?
In my opinion, the growing conditions are very specific to certain things. Robert and Carol grow some amazing things that I would love to grow at my place. There's no way they could make that journey 25 miles inland and tolerate the frost and the alkaline water and the heat. They do very well on the coast, but likewise, my jujubes would not do as well at Robert and Carol's because they require some other environmental conditions that just can't be met. So we're so lucky here on the Central Coast, you just travel a little ways and you can grow something else. And if someone has too much, you can do a lot of trading. The barter system is prevalent.
And from an agricultural inspector's perspective, are there any red flags that come up when you come across new species?
Not new species, but one thing the agriculture department's concerned about is people bringing fruits and vegetables in from other counties or men possibly bringing in a pest like the Asian citrus psyllid, which is on citrus fruit and twigs. They don't want them bringing any trees or cuttings into our county because we want to make sure we don't have it here and it doesn't spread. Thought of one plant I have in my yard. It's called a Cape gooseberry or a goldenberry. And it spreads all over, but I love it because I eat one. If it's good, I just squirt out some seeds, and then in a few months I have another plant growing, and the birds spread them, and so they come up all over the place. But it's really easy to pull them out, and grows within a year. It's just a small bush, kind of like a tomatillo, and you can make all kinds of sauces, put it in salads, and so it make a cheesecake toppings with it, so it's a really fun thing. But it's a little bit invasive, but not like it will take over the world or the county, you know.
Most people, when they think of fruit, they're thinking mostly of European fruits. Apples, peaches, pears, plums, all those things came from Europe or Asia, whatever. They were all brought into the United States. If you ask people what the largest native North American fruit is, I'll guarantee you that not more than 2 out of 10 would know that it's a pawpaw. So pawpaws are native here. There's a few native persimmons. There are a few native plums, a few berries. But other than that, almost every fruit that you eat was brought here from somewhere else. So all the fruits are exotic.
When's the last time a civilian, not a commercial farmer, but a civilian amateur, they call someone who went on vacation, caused a problem in California?
Well, I don't know the exact date, but it was someone got a little cutting of a citrus piece of wood and grafted it onto their tree down in LA, and it had the disease called citrus greening, huang lung bing, I think. But they traced it to that spot, you know, so that was ground zero. So I always tell the rare fruit growers, please, I don't want to be in the news, you know, as us being the center of infestation or a disease outbreak.
Well, it destroyed the citrus economy in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
It completely destroyed citrus in Florida, and it has the potential to destroy citrus in California. So that one innocuous event really had wide-reaching consequences. So it's better to be safe.
Especially in California, because we are an agricultural state.
Plus, I think if you're a responsible grower or smuggler, if you clean your seeds out of your exotic fruit before you bring it home, and then you make sure that you look at all those seeds and make sure there's not a little hole in one of them that maybe a bug got in. If you clean those and try to be very careful, you can safely bring stuff in.
Larry kind of made a passing comment about smuggling your seeds in from wherever you went on vacation. So we've got the ag inspector down there. What are the red flags for bringing in these seeds?
Well, there can be diseases on the skin that we can't even see, you know, or they might harbor a virus that when you plant it, then it gets into the soil and it grows in the plant, and then an aphid comes along and transmits it. There's a whole list of requirements of what's allowed from which country and which state, depending on what disease or pest occurs in that state. And we don't want it here in California to protect all of our crops.
The proper way is to go through the USDA and get a seed permit where you can bring in so many seeds. As long as it's not on the... There's a list.
The fruit was interesting and intriguing. Preparation went a lot more smoothly than I thought it would, considering I had five strangers taking over my kitchen. The conversation was enlightening, and the company was the best ever. But how was the food? The salad of various types of oranges and avocados and macadamia nuts, among many other ingredients. The kabocha squash stir-fry with bacon and shrimp. The farro pilaf with Meyer lemon. The passion fruit chicken with allspice leaves in the rice and the jujube tart were all spectacular and worthy of any trendy restaurant along the Central Coast. The jujube moonshine was out of this world. I was and am deeply grateful. Thank you to Larry Hollis, to Marilyn Severson, to Alicia Taft, to Jenny Weaver, to Carol Scott, all of the other people who are here. It's been an amazing experience of playing with food. That's what this segment is called. It's called Playing with Food. And do you feel that you have played with food tonight?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Play with food and when you have the chance.
And why?
This playing with food has certainly inspired me. Hopefully, it has inspired you too. You're listening to KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and with the California Rare Fruit Growers, I'm playing with food.